Hello, everyone. Thank you for joining us today for our second taping of our CATV show From the Arab World to IPFW. Our topic today is growing up in the Arab world. So we have experts from the Arab world, from two different countries who are born and raised there. On our left, we have Professor Asim Nasser from the Department of Communications. He's an associate assistant professor from the Department of Communications. And then to his right and to my left is Professor Muhammad Al-Hassan, and he is an associate professor of civil engineering in the Department of Engineering. So thank you very much for joining us today. In the beginning, can you please, we'll start with you, Asim, if you can give us a brief introduction about yourself. Where were you, where are you from, where were you raised?
I'm from Lebanon. I was raised in Beirut, which is the capital city of Lebanon. I was actually born in Manama, Bahrain, but, you know, pretty much like many of my Arab compatriots or, my Lebanese fellow nationals, we're pretty much everywhere. So, my family seemed to have found, an opportunity in Bahrain, so that's why I was there. So came back to Lebanon, I guess I'm going to reveal my age now. So we came back to Lebanon in 1975 when war started and ended in 1990. So this was my formative, childhood schooling years and what have you, then went on to, finished high school, went to American University of Beirut, which is in Beirut, it is an American university. Came to the United States in 97 to pursue my graduate studies, and I've been here ever since.
Thank you, Asim. How about you, Muhammad?
I am from Jordan. I was born in a village, small village in Jordan. It's to the northwest of Jordan. It's a village from the city of Erbid, if you are aware of that area. I was raised there my childhood, and I finished my bachelor and MS degrees in structural engineering in Jordan University of Science and Technology, one of the best schools in engineering there. I finished in 2003, 2000 my bachelor, 2003 is my master's. I joined January of 2004, the PhD program at the University of Illinois in Chicago. I finished in 2007 and I went to Seattle for 6 months to work in a company in engineering. In civil engineering, then I joined IPFW in January of 2008. I was promoted as of August 2012, and I'm an associate professor since 2012.
All right, thank you very much.
Thank you.
So we'll start. I will start with you, Muhammad. I'll ask you the first question, and it is, let's talk about culture.
Sure.
So does culture vary vastly from region to region in Jordan?
Not vastly, there's some little, variation between region to region, let's say. You can say there is three major, categories. There is the people who live in cities, mm-hmm. there is people who live in the village, and there is the people who live in the desert, the Bedou. So, however, the overall, guidelines are almost the same. But sometimes, even some villages, sometimes they are close. This village prefer something in terms of, let's say, of traditions, in terms of marriage tradition, in terms of the way, they get together. And let's say one more thing. The culture is almost also bound by the religion. So there is a mix between the religion and the culture. Sometimes there are things they don't belong to any religion, but they are cultural-wise. Mm-hmm. And sometimes, or majority of the things that we have in our culture are bound by the religion. So Muslim is... He has his own culture, but it's bound by the Islam. Christian, he has his own culture, but is also bound by the religion, background. Not vastly. I can say there's some slight, sometimes even the language. You can say, are you from Texas or from South or, the Midwest and something like that. We have that, but not vastly.
How about Asim? How was it in Lebanon?
I think it does in so many ways of speaking, simply because, whether it is based on generation or based on areas and so on. Remember, Lebanon has gone through so many transformations in the past 100 years or so. From the Ottoman rule in the late 1800s, early 1900s, to the French mandate, taking over. Of course, there were some divisions there based on religious sects and what have you. I mean, I kind of envy Jordanians for that, perhaps, because these religious camps in Lebanon and the divisions between them were sort of, how should we put it in pop culture means, but they were kind of on steroids in Lebanon, where people kind of took that religious identity and not necessarily practicing the faith as much as practicing who am I and who you are to me. So with these divisions, I mean, we have had a 15-year-long war where these communities were separated for a long time. And obviously within, you know, years more than a decade, you have a difference and growth of communities and cultures that have separated. Things are becoming much better now. We're beyond war, although politically speaking, things are also changing at this point. So there's a lot of turmoil happening, specifically because of the Syrian revolution and what's going on. Mm-hmm. But yeah, the divisions still exist. The divisions are cultural, not only because of sectarian communities, but between the haves and the have-nots. So yeah, no matter how you spin it, sadly, you know, our communities seem to be divergent in so many ways more than we would like to see.
So does religion play a big role in the culture in Lebanon, or not as much? Specifically the Islamic religion. I'm from Kuwait, so in Kuwait, okay, Islam plays a big role in the culture, in the way we live day-to-day life most of the time. How is it in Lebanon? I know there is, it's a little bit different.
I don't know how different it is from Kuwait or Jordan, but if anything, it is different, period. In the sense, something that we've inherited from the colonial times where, you know, we do have these communities that happen to be all in majority. So you can imagine, you know, there's not quite a minority group, at least not an official one, because they want to keep the and maintain the balance. But for instance, on a political level, it's actually, you know, a policy or a practice that the Lebanese president is always going to be a Maronite Christian. Mm-hmm. The prime minister or head of the council of ministers is going to be a Sunni Muslim. A Shiite Muslim is going to be the head of the parliament. Mm-hmm. So this kind of quota to kind of maintain the balance is in a way fake, because you're taking away the merit-worthy politicians, or you're taking away what we value in a person, and you're kind of underscoring religious identity that comes first, you know, that precedes that. Mm-hmm. And that's problematic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. In Jordan, do you think it...
You know, when you say culture, I mean, there is like the individual culture, like what's my culture, what's my family, and there is, let's say, talk about the overall culture. Mm-hmm. That's what you mean. For us, the overall, the country, there is the constitution. The religion of the country is Islam, because it's majority more than 95% or 90%, something like that. But let's say when you talk about individual, the culture doesn't, most of what I think, you know, in my country, you cannot tell sometimes this is a Christian or Muslim. Even you have the month of Ramadan, you will never find any Christian who will eat in front in the day of Ramadan. There's a respect, and you cannot say or you cannot tell this guy is this religion or this religion from the way they talk. It's a full respect between everybody. So the culture for whoever live in that area is the same, regardless of the religion. But the individual, that's a Christian, he has his own thing, so his culture is mixed with his religion. Same as Muslim, like you say, wearing, you know, hijab or covering. It's up to here, you know, but that's affect the culture. So for the same region, in the overall, the culture is not, it's almost the same for everybody. However, for the individual is bound by his religion.
Yes.
So it very much compares to pretty much how we live here, because to each her own or his own or what have you. But and you know, you practice your life in the whole household. Well, when it comes to faith, I suppose this is what it's like in Lebanon. But for some reason, yeah, it's more like people seem to wear their religious identity on their badge. And we're not talking about the emblems and the amulets that you wear. It's kind of a little beyond that. But anyway, sorry.
Yeah, it's especially in the month of Ramadan. That's the holy month. That's when you're going to notice the religion playing a big role in the country. But then outside of the month of Ramadan, you won't be able to tell if that person
You can easily find the minister of education or higher education is a Christian. The values are the same for raising, you know, the generation or the kids or, you know, the students of the country. Mm-hmm. So that's many, you know, the, I think now the minister is Wajih Yaweis, he's a Christian, you know. Mm-hmm. So, but the values are the same. Again, you cannot, there's, you know, Abu Awad and Marzouk.
Oh, yeah.
This is a very funny, you know, Arabic series. You know Abu Awad that was a Christian?
Abu Awad.
You know,
nope,
that Abu Awad was,
know.
You don't know. Mm-mm. Abu Awad is Christian, Marzouk is Christian, Soma is a Christian. Mm? Abu Khil is Christian, Abir Isa is a Christian. There's so many series, or those guys, they were, you know, in a series with Muslim, you know.
That's right.
Yeah, so it's...
And they played these roles, yep.
So in that country over there, to be honest, you know, you cannot tell. People live together, we have relationships. Those come and say congratulations, anything. The other ones, there is no way to say this is this religion and that religion. It's a culture.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Excellent. So let's talk about customs, traditions in Jordan. So what are the customs? What are the traditions? And do they, again, back to the variation, does it vary from certain regions, from the south, north, living in Amman, the capital? Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Again, this is one of the things that's bound by religion. However, mm-hmm. let's say I'm going to talk about, since majority is Muslims, you know. Mm-hmm. The covering or not, I mean, covering full, you know, hair, full body or the hair or something like that, or wearing something moderate or something like that. Not only that, there was like the old, you know, it's any woman that's in the 70s or 80s, she has a special thing. It's like the black gown or some special thing, great thing on her top. I don't want to, it's not scarf or something like that. You rarely find any woman now in 60s and down who's still keeping that thing. They will keep it in some marriage, mm-hmm. some, you know, parties, you know, and some celebrations, they will go back to the root. Even if you see young lady, sometimes when she presents in front of the king or something, they go with the tradition, you know. You see like a black gown with something, you know, some nice coloring on the side, and she put something in her hair. That thing is kind of now disappearing. Like my grand, one of my grandmas is still alive. That one passed away, and my grandfather passed away, both of them. But she's still putting that. She's still having that. So whatever you want to give her a gift, it has to be that black thing and that thing, you know. It's, and there is like, in the north, there is Ramtha, is close to Syria. That kind of a big city is, city not as big as Erbil. The way they dress, you know, if I remember, it's also different. So if you see special kind of dress, it's, you can tell this is from this region. Mm-hmm. And also when you said like Bedou, mm-hmm. the guys, you can tell this is, you know, a woman from there. But it's, yeah, it varies, but the generation, let's say, above 70 or 80 are still keeping this, but most of the ones that they are living now, it's, I think it's, they're going down, just a regular scarf, you know, a hijab, and mm-hmm. covering, you know, she can cover with full, you know, dress or with a skirt, you know, and a shirt, something like that.
Mm-hmm. All right. And how about in Lebanon? Can you talk to us a little bit about the customs and traditions, and do they, does it vary a little bit from an area to area, from region to region?
Absolutely, it does, yes, mm-hmm. of course. But yeah, picking up on what you said about, I never thought of it as a tradition to kind of wear, you know, a head ishar. Exactly. Mm-hmm. Like we don't have a, we don't yep. want to call it a veil because it's not really a veil. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's interesting because some people take pride in it. It's kind of, you know, it's how you wear it, what you do with it, you know, the way it's folded. You know, it's for lack of a better comparison, but I'm just thinking of the Irish kilts and how, you know, it's their region or their family. Of course, a kilt you'd wear somewhere else, not on your head. Otherwise, you'd be very weird as an Irish. But aside from that, it's an interesting kind of phenomenon where one thing, and I know we're going to get into these questions about the difference between the United States and the Arab world, or mm-hmm. where we come from at least. But yeah, like so many women that I know who do wear that, it's basically out of their pride, and they're kind of expressing their own identity of mm-hmm. why they want to put on a scarf, not as commonly known in the United States to be, oh yeah, because, you know, society makes them do that. I mean, in some cases, there is the case, but not necessarily. But going back to your original question, and I digress, forgive me, about traditions. Goodness, we have, because of the various communities, that none of which are minorities, so to speak, it's great to be around April in Lebanon because for some reason, you end up with every Monday being a holiday. And I can see the smiles on your faces right now. It's kind of like, oh yeah, it's like heaven. It is, because it's like the beginning of spring, but you have the Maronite Christian or the Catholic Easter, and then you have another Easter for the Greek Orthodox or the Russian Orthodox. You have a Muslim holiday going on and so on. So many of these, I mean, this diversity, which in some ways, when it was claimed as a particular political identity, was problematic. But it's amazing how everybody embraces this diversity when it comes to holidays, because you're, you know, taking 2 days off for Ramadan, one for the Sunnis, one for the Shias. You're taking the Adha or the big Eid, you know, and everybody takes that. It's by law and so on. Yeah, we have so many holidays. It's just incredible. It's amazing that, you know, people get work done. But wait, maybe they don't. But anyway, yeah, it's. I mean, this is a tradition of, if I may call it so myself, basically embracing life and you know, taking the best out of it. Mm-hmm. I think the tradition of keeping with family, doing things on, you know, the weekends or you know, always gathering together and so on. And we're not talking about family as in, you know, brothers, sisters, and mother and father. We're talking about extended family. Mm-hmm. To some, this is great. To others, like me, it wasn't as great because we ended up, you know, My cheeks were always squeezed by my grandmother, and man, she's got tough hands. But anyway, I'll talk about that to my therapist or something. But yeah, I'll let you be. Sorry.
Thank you. But it actually made me think of a couple of different questions I would like to ask probably later on regarding diversity. Yeah. And
can I add something?
Yes, go ahead, please.
Let's say Amman is the capital of Jordan. To be honest, you know, it's a major, you know, transformation in terms of the way they dress. You know, you can. To be honest, you know, it's a major, you know, transformation in terms of the way they dress. You know, you can. So I would say, usually, you know, the people from Beirut or Lebanon, they are not conservative in their dresses. So when we see something like that, you say, are we in Beirut or something like that? So now it's. So it's Amman now. It's I wasn't. I mean, when I went back for my first, you know, visit, it's kind of a shock for me. You know, people are start, you know, doing this non-conservative at all. You know, so. There is a change now. I'm telling you that change is within 10 years. Mm-hmm. So when I was a student at my university, we rarely see something like that, you know. But now it's, you see it everywhere. I mean, going non-conservative in terms of dresses, in terms of some other things. But yeah, there is a change.
For the record, Muhammad, textiles and cloth material is becoming more expensive in Lebanon. That's why we have short shorts and shorter skirts. So it's a matter of, you know, economic and financial.
Save some money.
Right, exactly.
So why is it in the past 10 years, specifically in the past 10 years or the recent years, let's say, is there a reason?
My explanation is just the computer and the internet. You know, it's exponential. Things are going exponential. If you just can think about it. Internet started 1992 in Jordan. Now you see a kid 6 years old, or he has a cell phone, he has a smartphone, he has a Facebook account, and every kid is just doing this, you know. So it's kind of things to me is accelerated very exponential in terms of social media, these things, and the internet. That's the reason from my point of view. You know?
Yeah, I think for the same reason. I mean, growing up in Lebanon, watching all these films and, you know, coming from Hollywood and incidentally, films and TV shows that come from America, Britain, France, and so on are not dubbed, are not, you know, I mean, they're rarely even translated. I think they are, meaning like you have captions or subtitles or what have you. But yeah, like seeing these images, fascinating. It's like, oh, wow, look at what people wear, and maybe we should, you know, dress something like this. I mean, from an anecdote, I just remember in the late 70s, there was this United Nations concert for peace or what have you, and you know, it's the 70s, so you can imagine it's the Bee Gees and Donna Summer, and there was Rod Stewart, and Rod Stewart was wearing this spandex leopard print pants, very tight, had lipstick on, had earrings, and I just remember, like, you know, he's jumping around singing, "Do You Think I'm Sexy?" and so on. And, you know, my mom just, you know, drinking her tea or what have you, she goes, "Ah, those Americans." You know, just thinking about that distance. And you know, it's always, you know, it's the sphere of such behavior was the United States. But then again, so-and-so, we're kind of adopting these behaviors. And we, yeah, so when you say the internet and the exponential.
That's true. Let me also maybe say something else.
Go ahead.
Not only for the ladies, to be honest, it's for the men. Let me just give you something. It's My cousin, you know.
He was the first from my village to go study in Amman. We all, you know, engineering is the best school in close to Jordan, you know, Jordan University of Science and Technology. So he went to Amman for financial study. He was the first to dress the low jeans or the Levi's. And every time we see him, we make fun of him. What's that? Why do you dress this? Because he was in the city, you know, the capital of Amman, they have all this thing, you know. They start, then it comes, move around. Now, when I went back, you know, you cannot find the high, you know, cut jeans or they say the most, the one for 30 or 40 years old or something like that. I said, where do you get these jeans from? Every jeans they have now is low cut or what they call it, like, you know, a carrot or something like right. that. So it's complete. That guy was, you know, he used to guy, like, get shy, you know, when he put that thing, you know. Now everybody's doing it within less than 10 years.
Mm-hmm. Wow. You can see also in the music videos. The music yeah. videos back from when I was little, back in the 80s or mid-80s, for me at least, it was completely different than the music videos. We call them video clips, as we call them in Arabic, than nowadays. Mm-hmm. So it's what children are exposed yeah. to and what they see for music is completely different. They have a different vision. It's not about the music and the sound or the voice of the singer. It's more of what you see, the image that
That's
you're
true.
Seeing on TV.
Yeah, gone are the days when they considered the voice being an instrument. Now yeah. it's just the body seems
yeah,
to be.
There you go. Yeah.
And the clip, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. Don't tell me about Haifa with the that look on your face, you know
there's, I'm telling you, 90%, I'm not a big fan of music, but I used to know all of those who sing. Mm-hmm. Now there's names. More than 90% of them, I have no idea what's their names. So,
that's
what,
true.
You don't know this?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't know this, you know.
That's true. That's
right. Everybody sings because of this, you know, technology, the music. You know, you don't have to have a nice, you know, talent or voice to sing. Mm-hmm. Best, you know, you have, it's just your voice. There's no this, you know, what we are doing here,
sound
you know,
effect.
Cleaning the sound and these effects, but.
So let me talk about when you came here to the U.S., what major differences, we'll start with you, Muhammad. What major differences did you notice between Jordan mm-hmm. and America? And generally speaking, just major differences.
Yeah, the major thing, you know, let's say impressed me is the system, mm-hmm. the organization, the infrastructure, mm-hmm. how good they are, how big their equipments, how all of these things and the organization and the system, starting with the kids. You can have in the United States, you can have 200 students in the preschool class, 4 years old. You ask them to walk on the same line. You will see them all on the same line, like ants. You bring 10 mature guys from Jordan. You ask them to walk on the straight same line. You will never get them to walk on the same line.
Mm-hmm.
So I have I raised 3 kids so far. I have 10, 8, 6, and I have 4 months. The first 2 years in the preschool and in the kindergarten and those things, they teach them how to share and how to be organized and work in the system. This is what we need because people over there are not organized at all. Mm-hmm. So that's one of the major things. So people are really, really organized, you know, because they have it in their blood now. 4 years, you put it in his system. Mm-hmm. His mind is set like that. I have to be organized. I have to follow the rules and all of that. So this is one of the things, how organized the infrastructure, the quality of life. You pay all the bills online. You can do all of that. I used to stand 2 hours just to pay the phone bill, you know, or the electricity bill
That's
and
true.
All of this. So these are the things that amazed me, you know, when I came about, when I saw what difference, you know, in terms of technology, you know.
How about you, Yasin?
Wow, talk about different perspectives. I mean, yes, I did see that people are definitely a lot more organized. My first kind of appreciation of difference and kind of made me really long for my days back home, pretty much how protective people are and how very much the discipline.
Mm-hmm.
I think I've kind of gotten accustomed to it, but I feel that to a certain extent for kids, the discipline is stifling here. Yes, they are very well-mannered, very well, you know, ordered and what have you. The experience is that I was taking, when I first came to the U.S., I was in Washington, D.C. I went to American University for my Master's of Fine Arts in film. So waiting for that bus, we lived pretty close to a middle school elementary school, and kids had to cross the street from one side of the school to the playground, the public playground, to play their tennis or whatever it was. And it was really amazing that the first time I saw this, I was kind of very envious. I'm like, wow, look at this. They're actually crossing over to you know, like half tennis. And tennis, you know, it's you play, you know, maximum 2-2, right? As opposed to 20-20, where, you know, in my classroom, we're a lot more back home and so on. So the first day, I was kind of envious of all the paraphernalia that they had, all the great things, and, you know, that we never had in my school days and whatnot. But later on, that completely changed. Like, within that same week, I found, goodness, like, none of these kids basically have, they just do things as robots. They're very much structured, and every, you know, they're always watched all the time. There were days, and I'm sure we've had this at least here, you know, if you have a, you know, if you live with a big backyard or what have you. But I'm sure you remember, like, you know, the time when, you know, hey, mom, just like at 7 a.m. in the morning, I'm out of here. See you at lunchtime. And, you know, it's basically, and they're completely in complete safety and complete, you know, the neighborhood cared for you, not just your parents, mm-hmm. you know, the extended family all over the place. So that for me was kind of a big shock. Mm-hmm. And also how conservative people are here in the United States. Yeah, I gave the example in class, so you might remember that. But yeah, I came here with the impression that every other word that you say in the United States, you drop the F-bomb and the words that come along with it, thinking that this is how cool people spoke. I showed up my first day of school with a shirt that was pretty obscene for anywhere, but I showed up to my graduate school and, you know, the person who welcomed me was not very welcoming. I mean, she basically laughed her, you know, eyes off, to say the least. But yeah, I just thought it was going to be, you know, hey, I'm going to fit right in. I've been watching Starsky and Hutch and Three's Company, and you know, I watched all three Arnold Schwarzenegger movies. Like, you know, hey, you know, hasta la vista. Well, what more do you want, right? And it was a shock of my life to think that, oh, okay, I should clean up my language because people are not sitting next to me and that. So yeah,
curious to know what that shirt said. Maybe we'll tell me later. After, unless
it's cable television, we can, you know. Well, pretty much it was a fuzzy T-shirt, a very fuzzy T-shirt that you really, it was impossible for you to read. Mm-hmm. And it said, masturbation causes blindness. You asked.
Okay, you're right. So, I asked for it. So right. Anyway, so
but no,
to
no,
switch.
But that's the thing. I know, to switch to a cleaner.
To switch,
topic,
yeah.
But to think that a Lebanese person, somebody from the Arab world where we're probably yeah. more conservative and so on, to show up thinking that is completely acceptable in the U.S. I mean, I know it's incredibly inappropriate to talk about this in a student context. But then again, like, this comes from a subjective experience. But think of how this experience is kind of, wow. Like, it's not just me who believed that. It's pretty much all of my friends back home, so, which is why I don't invite them here. So, hey, there we go.
So you made me also think for two more different topics I would like to talk based on what your answer just now. One is family. You brought up the family issue. Mm-hmm. And I also want to talk about some of the misconceptions that you thought of America or Americans in general. So obviously there is the conservative issue is one. Mm-hmm. But let me go back to the family. So is family viewed differently in the Arab world than here, based on your experience, of course, based on your culture, and based on your experience or what you see here in America, and how family members or how parents interact with their children. How different? How ties? Family ties? Does that differ as well?
Mm-hmm. Muhammad, you probably.
So before we talk about the family, I mean the parents and the child, and mm-hmm. that over there you are bound by a family name. Mm-hmm. So you have a family of 1,000, 2,000, 4,000, like my family is. Al-Hassan is one small family from a big family of Madarna. Mm-hmm. So anyone from that family is considering himself or herself as your cousin. Mm-hmm. And the family come together when there is a major issue, if there is like a fight or conflict with the other, another, you know, side, they come together. If there is someone sick, we collect money together and go visit that one. And you have to invite everybody for your wedding and your engagement, you know, ceremony. So there's a big family. So that's why one of the reasons, you know, you have to stay with the family, because the family is the one who keep you right, defend you, help you, support you anytime you need them. Mm-hmm. That's one of the complaints now about how you vote over there, you know, for the house. Mm-hmm. Is it just one vote or two votes? Because the first vote for sure has to go to the family. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, they are not going to help you. You know, you are bound by a family that will defend you in front of anyone, government, any other people, and all of that. And they will support you if you are sick, if you need money, if you need all of that. Then you come to the family, you know, as a, you want to maybe talk about this before we talk about the small family, the parents.
Sure, yeah, I totally agree with you. I mean, I find it to be an amazing system where a friend of mine doesn't call his family, you know, the branching out of the family as a family tree. It's a family bush because everybody knows everybody. Everybody's in everybody's business. And, you know, as a system, like, it's amazing how it works. And when we look at it from our standpoint, I mean, I find it interesting when I talk to friends who are from, you know, not from Lebanon or from the Arab world, they might not quite comprehend the importance of it, and they think of it as kind of annoying, as in, wow, gosh, I can't imagine like how many cards you have to send out by mail, you know, for a specific holiday or what have you. Mm-hmm. The point is, and I think Muhammad has very much said that very eloquently, the sense of a community that is bound by not only blood ties, but basically also by, you know, the values, the norms. You live for the entity of the family, and the individual in this case is not the important. It's the individual thrives through the family community. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And I find that to be very different here. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, I mean, it's amazing that, you know, like one person I knew, you know, she doesn't know her cousins. I mean, sadly, it's becoming like that in the Arab world because you have diasporic communities and everybody's kind of, you know, working somewhere else. So I'm, I fear that, you know, my children, when I hopefully have some, anyway, you know, they won't know their cousins because, you know, I have a brother who lives in Dubai and I live in Fort Wayne, Indiana, and so on. So, yeah, you wanted to go more into...
Even let's say it's kind of as a child, you know, it's you know, you talk about a lot about bullying here in schools. So if you're bound by a family, even if you are 6 years or 7 years, they will defend you. So for those who are small or they are from another place or something, they used to get hurt. But family is a big issue. I mean, it's...
Now, let's say how many cards you need to send or something like that. Like, let me tell you just the example of me and my family, then that's exactly, can apply to everybody. Like my father, you know, we collect money, he has something, you know, anytime he will take care of some things. If there's too many, you know, things or too many places he has to go and say congratulations or something, then he will send me or send my brother. Then there is my cousins together as a group. They also take care of other things. Then the big family. So there is places, you know, so you pay some money to the father for the brothers. Then the cousins and the grandfather, he has his own. We go visit that and that. So, and then not only the family, whoever from your village is counted on you. So brother, cousin, family, then the village, then the city. That's how we have it, you know.
They never send me anywhere. But anyway, that's a different story.
All right, so let's go to the other part that I wanted to talk about was the misconceptions that us as Arabs have about the West, or specifically about America. When you came here, was it a misconception? Or did your views change? Stayed the same? Yeah, how was your experience?
Yeah, massively. I really thought, and again, my impression of the United States was pretty much through TV, radio, and all how everything is lovey-dovey. But, you know, the first shock was how there's a value to the individual and kind of the respect of personal space. But that personal space varied drastically between where I came from and where we are here. I mean, for me, I'm overweight, so hey, everybody back home, whether I knew them, I didn't know them, or whatever, everybody had an opinion about whether I should lose weight or lose more weight. But over here, it's like, wow, look at that. If I make a self-deprecating job about, like, you know, joke about job, hey, what's the difference? But if I made that kind of a commentary and what have you, gosh, like, people would be, you know, taken aback. It's like, oh, it's awkward. We don't know how to deal with this, you know. And it's very much, you know, it's amazing.
that we were never going to kind of approach kind of very personal stuff and kind of look into that. While, yes, I can see the pros and cons of that, but I see here you can be an island surrounded by millions of people, but yeah, wow. Mm-hmm. And for me, it's scary how, you know, after coming from a family that was very much incredibly annoyingly in my business, to kind of disappear into space. I really longed for, it's like, oh my gosh, you know, somebody, you know, say something. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, maybe just going back to the family of the parents, you know, mm-hmm. over there, just to tell you something, you know, the parents will pay for the tuition and all the education mm-hmm. for their kids, boys and girls. Mm-hmm. So you just take care of your business. You don't have to work. You don't pay for your tuition. You go to the university. You do good so you can find a job after you finish. Not only that, you cannot leave the house before marriage.
Yes.
So the girl, you know, from your dad's house to your husband's house. The guy, same thing. You finish, you stay here till you get married and you can open a house and sustain a house. So that's one of the major differences.
Yeah, I mean, why would you?
To be honest, you know, I'm really impressed and surprised with the kids here. You know, they are 18 and 19. They have their own business. They work hard, 60 hours, some of my students. 70 hours. He was 21 years old. He has a company. And he has straight A, you know, ABs, you know. Mm-hmm. So that's a good thing. And sometimes, to be honest, I'm not sure, maybe it's dangerous, you know, because how many guys they can succeed on that thing. Over there, you are fully paid till you graduate from the university.
So by that's your family.
By your family, by your parents. I mean, even sometimes if they don't have money, they will borrow money just to send you to school. And sometimes if you are not eligible to go to top-notch school, they will send you to a private school if you score low. So education for them is, and maybe we'll talk about education, and believe it or not, one of the misconceptions, my brother-in-law, who is married to a lady from Australia, mm-hmm. she came visited like 7 years ago, around 7 years ago. She really believed that we have camels, and that's how we have horses, you know, and these things, that's how we, she was shocked, you know. It's full, you know, civilization over there, you know. I can say maybe Beirut, I'm sure Beirut is Dubai, Beirut, you know, those are like big cities in United States. Amman now is changing like that, you know, but we have very nice infrastructure there. And talk about education of women. I was in the civil engineering department in my university. More than 50% were females, ladies. That's in engineering. I know civil is the most because the electrical, they have one lady, and the mechanical, they have one lady. They used to come to our department. But more than 50% from those who graduate from university are females. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. People may not think that way. And also people, sometimes I hear some talk shows and something, the woman is undermined there, she is forced to do that. The lady is not forced to do anything in terms of dressing, in terms of the look, in terms of everything by her husband. That's her parents. And when you say parents, your dad and your mom want the best for you. If she doesn't wear anything, it's up to the husband to go and ask her hand or not. Someone, like it or not. But that's the misconception. They think that husbands are forcing, you know, women and, you know, putting them in some situation. Not true. It's just if your parents will let you do whatever you want, then it's up to the guy to go and you want to marry this lady or not. So that's one of the things. It's like, hey, you guys are undermining women, you know, and you don't have much, they don't have much right and something, they are not educated and these are some of the conceptions that I hear. And again, the other thing I told you about, you know, riding camels and doing that thing, you know, for the transportation.
Since you touched on some bases or some you mentioned some stuff, Muhammad, just now about ask her hand in marriage. I wonder if you can maybe talk about marriage. I wonder if it's the same thing in Lebanon. I assume it is the same way in the Arab culture. How a man would go and marry a woman. How do marriages work? Is it the same as how it is in America, very romantic, or is it?
Actually, I think it's even
on the
more
region.
Romantic. Actually, I think it's even more romantic where I come from than over here, just because, yeah, I know, right? I have it painted all like in daisies and daffodils and all of this. But there's this hazing process that goes for the man where he has to take his family and kind of formally, you know, kind of ask for someone's hand in marriage. And yes, it's the dance. It's the two-step of this. I mean, because you know, at that point, you know, the woman and man would have been in some form of a relationship of some sort. You know, how deep into that relationship, you know, it varies pretty much like it does in the United States. But I think it's not as casual as it can be in the United States. There's some sort of, I think, yeah, families are hanging on to tradition. And going back to something that you said, I mean, you just like sparked something interesting about how, like, yeah, the conception of what people think of women back in the Arab world over here. And I think it very much varies on what does this freedom and liberty of and you know, emancipation for women mean to women back in the Arab world and to women in the United States. I mean, interestingly enough, you'll be surprised to find that, you know, in some moderate communities, lower income communities, at least in Lebanon, and this is based on my own research, some women think that women in America are oppressed, but oppressed in the sense of consumption and basically oppressed by the messages and hegemonic forces that keep you want to keep purchasing stuff to make you look better. It's the oppression of the economy, so to speak. It's the oppression of capitalism. And yeah, I just went like ideological on you here. I don't mean to do that. While, you know, and going back to the hijab and all of this, you know, some women find the hijab to be a form of liberty to their own personal lifestyles because, like, you know what? We don't want to subscribe to this overconsumption, hyper going into brand names and perfume and cologne. We want to be taken seriously, and this is one way we do it to achieve it. And this is, I'm not suggesting that it's everybody who's on the same equal plane thinking that, but that there is a thought and there is such a difference. And I went on a tangent here.
But I'm glad you did, because I wanted to talk about the role of women as well. So I'm glad you touched base on that.
But yeah, going back to the marriage thing, yeah, it happens within, I mean, like the wedding whole ceremony. It's the big family. I look at Muhammad and like he's very nostalgic about this now, because weddings are pretty much a whole neighborhood, a whole town. It's very festive. Because it's really a celebration of the union of not two individuals, but the union of two families extended in so many ways. But I'll keep it at that.
All right. How about in Jordan? Is it in Jordan,
it's
different?
Kind of how much they know each other from my culture. I know in Lebanon it's more. Maybe in Amman now is this. They know each other and something like that. But usually not in my culture, you know, it's or my background or my village and some city, you know. The city around me, you know. Usually you like someone or you are recommended, you know, this girl is good, you know, her family is good, you know, how about you think? So that's what happened to me, you know. I liked a lady. Me and my wife are from the same class. We started together and we finished together. We never talk to each other. Because ladies, the conservative ladies, they don't talk to guys unless that's for a group, you know, in a law or something like that. So I went to the master. She went back to the master. We worked together. I said, are you Layla, you know, were you with us? Then, you know, I knew her. I asked about her father. Everything is good. I told my father, hey, listen, there's a lady here and I like her, you know, so maybe you can ask her dad, you know, to marry her. So you send your mom and dad. So the mom has to see her beauty and she has to tell you everything is good, you know, if that's, she cannot describe too much detail. She will tell you it's good or not good. She will know what you want. Then, after you ask about her dad, her uncles, everybody, then they will spend like at least 1 week asking about you. Her dad will go to the village, he will go to the teacher, he will go to your uncle to make sure this guy is good and he doesn't have any background and all of that. Then they will call you, hey, listen, can you come again? So we discuss some things. What do you think about her working? What do you think here about her education? So make sure everything is good. You have no, you know, objections to her work and all of that. Then you'll have the agreement. There's initial celebration where you put, you know, the rings. Then there's another one, you know, the wedding, the big thing. As you said, you know, families get together. So when you marry, you marry, you can say, you marry you and the family. You want a family. All the family. When I say family, not the parents. You talk about 5,000 of other group, you know. So when you have something, you tell them, hey, I'm married to your daughter, you know, to the family member. Just let me tell you this. So the woman there, they have a chance to work. But if they work, they don't have to spend on the house. So her money is for her, and your money is for her and you. So that's how good things is. I tell my wife, your money is your money, my money is me and you. So they don't have to spend any penny on the house. Unless she's good and her husband is in need or something, she may help him. But that's up to her. The man is responsible to provide for the house. That's why she has a choice to work or not to work. These are misconceptions about, you know, the woman, you know, women in our country. They are highly respected. And I always say something, you know, usually when the women grow up, their rank increase, their respect increase. Unfortunately, you know, I see some cases here when they are getting old, they are going to the old, you know, the houses, and the kids are not coming back to ask about them. The higher the more the age of a woman there, or
a
grandfather,
man.
A man, yeah. The higher the respect for him. Mm-hmm. So everybody listen. Everybody just want to come and kiss the hand and, well, please, you know, let me know how I can help you, gifts, all of that thing. And all the kids will fight who want to bring here or him to her dad, you know, this week my mom is coming to my house. No, this week, no, she's having lunch with me and all of that. That's, you know, sad thing, to be honest, you know. Parents are not appreciated as here in this country as we appreciate them when they get old back home.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the concept of old folks home does not exist. I mean, somebody tried that in Lebanon, and they went bankrupt because they didn't.
Same thing in Kuwait, yes.
Yeah,
it has
the
a
biggest
very
shame that, oh my goodness, mm-hmm. you're sending off, you know, a grandfather or grandmother off to die somewhere else mm-hmm. or what have you. No, mm-hmm. they should be, yeah. But you're right, we did fight about.
But don't you think it's a little bit hard for the elderly folks who has no family? That's where it's kind of.
Usually they live in a neighborhood with they will find a nice neighbors who will take care of them. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's why you have a family again.
Yeah, there's no
your
such
sister,
thing as a family. Yeah.
Your rare situation, you have someone by himself or by herself, you know. Mm-hmm. And usually such guy, all the village house for my village are like his house. Hey, come here, then you invite him, and everybody will like and support him. But usually you have your sister, your sister's son, your sister's daughter, and mm-hmm. all of this, you know, will take care of, and the family will help.
Yeah, we have one in Kuwait, but you are not supposed to send your parents there. If you do send your parents there, or even your uncle there, it's very, very negative. You're putting a very negative impression on yourself.
If you are a guy and
yeah.
the woman that you're asking her hand to marry, she know about this one, she will never marry you. Because she's
That's
saying
true.
If he's not good to his mom or his dad, that guy will not be good to me. Mm-hmm. You know, so. Mm-hmm.
And let's talk about education. I have several questions. I know we only have a few more minutes left, but I would like to touch base on education, how it differs from here versus there. Some people say, like, for us as Arabs, it's such a great honor, such a great thing to have, and you take pride of, I have education from America, I have a college degree from America, versus another Arab country. Mm-hmm. However, the grade school, let's say from first grade all the way to 12th grade, we feel as Arabs, well, I'll speak for myself, I feel it's stronger than the education system here, excluding college level.
And the information.
Excluding the higher
you have
education.
Proof.
Yes. So.
I can
go ahead.
Answer this, you know.
Go ahead.
Look, to the high school education and the bachelor there is much stronger than here, mm-hmm. even in the science. However, no one can beat the United States in the graduate program. That's why, you know, people come here and study. The grants, the ideas, look at Apple, look at Microsoft, look at the infrastructure and all this. United States is leading because of the graduate program. The undergraduate program, unfortunately, for engineering, let's say, is a little bit weak in math because the students come directly, you know, from the high school, which they don't take much stuff, you know, to an engineering program. Over there, there is the national exam, and that national exam is a nightmare. The level of the national exam is like 1 year or the first semester in a college, starting math and all of that thing. So up to the bachelor, education in Jordan is much stronger than education in, like the curriculum, the civil engineering curriculum. Here we have like 128 hours, we have 162 hours. So I have a bachelor of science in structural engineering. Here you have bachelor of science in civil engineering. It means structural engineering, it means I completed civil engineering and I went around 30 credit hours in structures. So that's how we graduate there. A lot of math, very complicated math. You will never see any question you saw in a homework or in a previous exam that's repeated in an exam over there. You are lucky. Here, to be honest, you know, half of the questions are homework or more than half, or something that we work out on the board. Mm-hmm. Over there, again, you will see 92, the grades, 82, 75, 51, 52, 50, 50, 50. very difficult. My grade was 78% out of 100, and I was seventh among 150, and the first was 81. So that's how tough. Now they told me they are getting soft a little bit. Hopefully, you know, they will. But that's till the bachelor, the education in Jordan is much stronger than the education in the United States. However, no comparison with Jordan or any other country in terms of the graduate program in engineering, let's say, because some Europe, you know, I think in the medical, they are also leading equivalent. But that's the difference.
How about in Lebanon? Is it the same way or?
Different? I mean, they have, here we have something called grade inflation. At home, I think it's more of grade deflation.
That's true.
You know, the harder a professor is,
that's true.
Better they think they are, and so on.
Yeah.
That's a good point that you make. But in terms of you know, pre-college classes and schools and so on, I mean, in my experience, high school, I hated high school. I hated middle school. Elementary school was all right. And why
start
did I
making
hate
friends
those?
There.
I know what?
Some friends there, you know.
Right, playing. Exactly. But no, like with high school, as much as I just despised every single minute of it, the amount of work was just incredible. Mm-hmm. And I hated it then, but looking back at it and kind of knowing the things that I picked up from these days, whether it's like, you know, I was never mathematically inclined or physics inclined or sciences, what have you. But still, like the things that I've picked up from these school days and so on, and wow, I'm just, you know, like for me, it sounds like the obvious things that you'd learn, but comparing this to nieces and nephews in the U.S. and what they know. And I mean, of course, this is going to sound like your grandfather who, you know, hey, you know, I used to walk 6 feet in the snow for 3 miles and, you know, only to play my Nintendo, you know, that kind of thing. So it really, yeah, I'm going to sound like this. But in effect, what it is, it's that, like, wow, till this very day, and things are slow to change, so with schools, they think they're being competitive by kind of dumping a lot of information on you. Mm-hmm. But the things that I knew in terms of global issues, geography, history, oh my goodness, like, you know, the names that I've learned in middle school where no child should be exposed to these things. I don't know why in my school system we were exposed to these things and so on. I see the benefit of that because I felt in Lebanon I knew more about the world than I would have in the United States. Mm-hmm. I think it was very much a surprise to me that I know more about the U.S. than my peers when I first came to my graduate program. Mm-hmm. I'm like, how? But anyhow.
Because of time, I will end the questions right now. And so at the end, I would like to thank Professor Muhammad Al-Hassan. Thank you very much for your time.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Thank you, Professor Asim Nasser. Appreciate you guys joining us today and be our panelists for the day for
thank
our topic.
Thank you for doing this.
Thank you for
organizing
this.
We should
this.
Have had another. I feel like we need to have a second episode, just a continuation of this, because we didn't touch on politics. We didn't touch on a lot of different topics that we would love to, I'm sure our audience would like to hear. But I would also like to thank CATV. Thank you very much for taping this event or this show from their world to IPFW. I hope you guys had enjoyed it. I would like to thank Jeremy Tucker, Shwaib Hamlat, and Matt Cotton. I would also like to thank very much Professor Andrew Downs from the Department of Political Science for giving us the idea to have this show. From the Arab world to IPFW. So thank you to our panelists, thank you to our audience, and hopefully we'll see you in our next taping and we will advertise it.